Inside the Cross Podcast.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Inside the Cross MCLA Podcast. My name is David Franklin, recording live from Greenville, South Carolina, the site of the MCLA National Championship. Here back for the second year in a row. We are on our off day on the with the competition on Wednesday. The Final Four is set for both brackets. Chalk all the way in both divisions. In Division One, Colorado State advancing to play BYU in the Final Four for the third consecutive season. On the other side, Arizona State, as long as Chris Malone has been there, the Sun Devils have made the Final Four, and they will face John Galvin's Colorado Buffaloes on the Division II side of things. No surprise to see St. Thomas making it to the Final Four as the one seed. They will face Liberty, the four seed emerging to the MCLA Division II Final Four out of the SCLC since Eckerd did that in 2006. St. John's, of course, we might possibly have a rematch of the Tommy Johnny game. We've had it, that would be the third time that those teams met. They met in the regular season. They met in the UMLL championship game. But standing in the Johnny's way is, of course, Mason Goodhand's Westminster Griffins, who won it all in 2008. And they are transitioning to MCLA Division One next year. But we start off the podcast by introducing Dan Matthews, the host of Lacrosse Talk Radio out of Colorado, a longtime MCLA follower and supporter. Dan, thank you so much for being with us. You've been the lead play-by-play guy for the most part all tournament long to this point. Tell us about some of the games you've called and what stood out to you the most.
You know, Dave, as I sit here in this process and I've been watching the games, the things that's really standing out to me is the new entry of some of the teams. At Liberty, brand new to the tournament, performing very well. I thought that they might have been overseeded as a four seed. They've proven me wrong as they come in and are sitting in a position in which that if they play their A game and the Tommies don't bring their A game, I would not be surprised to see Liberty in the championship game.
Dan, you had an opportunity to see the Coast Guard Bears play in this tournament. This is, of course, their first and last MCLA tournament, as they were able to apply through the academy to gain permission to participate in the postseason. But Gary Weller telling us on a Monday morning that they are indeed making the jump to Division III. What was your impression of Gary Weller and his squad from Connecticut?
Gary Weller is a character. I really like him, and I think that he brings a lot of personality to that Coast Guard squad. Like any military academy, the Coast Guard is extremely disciplined, and that's why they ended up being in the tournament. That's also why they end up advancing into that second round game. And unfortunately for them, they run into the defending national champion, and that's as far as they go. But, I think Gary Weller, with the mentality of a military team, is going to have some success at the Division III level, and he's going to have it fairly quickly. Whereas most schools making the transition into the NCAA tend to be in for a real rude awakening. Michigan most recently making that transfer, and John Paul's Michigan Wolverines, just one win this year, a win last year. And it just takes a lot of time to acclimate to that process. I know that recently there was an article in the Denver Post talking about the Pioneers, Bill Tierney, hoping that John Galvin's Colorado Buffaloes and Alex Smith's CSU Rams will join them at the NCAA level. But I think John would tell you that whether Title IX or not, the Buffaloes probably aren't ready for a Division I type program quite yet. The adjustment is something fierce to make that adjustment. To go into the Division III level, I think a little bit different, and to have a disciplined program such as the Coast Guard Academy, I think that they'll have some success fairly early.
Yeah, that's very well said, and, you know, I appreciate the fact that you bring up Michigan, and, you know, I talked about this with Gary Weller and, you know, a bunch of other people here at the tournament about Coast Guard and the jump that they're making, and, you know, just very important to note for programs with such rich history and tradition such as Michigan and Coast Guard. You know, as far as Michigan's concerned, Michigan lacrosse did not start in 2012. It started long before that, and people at Coast Guard Academy will tell you the same as they make their transition into Division III. So really well said. And, you know, Dan, you've been watching and covering this territory of collegiate lacrosse for a very long time. What makes it so special to you?
I think college athletics in general are just amongst the best. These are still kids, maybe sans collegiate football, that are playing for the love of the game, and especially at the MCLA level. These are kids that put their hard-earned money or mom's and dad's hard-earned money into the program. They're paying their dues to play. It's not very many of the MCLA schools that are as fortunate as Mace Goodhand's Westminster Griffins, where they're an NAIA program and the school really gives them a lot of support financially.
Mm-hmm.
More typically, you pay a pretty steep fee to be able to play. And if you make it to the MCLA championships, like we have here today, we're dealing with teams that have had to raise a whole lot of money. I know Oregon State, for example, had to take out a $45,000 loan from the school just to get here and play in the tournament.
Yep.
So these guys are playing for the love of the game. And I think that the passion that is exhibited on the field at the MCLA level is unrivaled.
No question about it. And Dan, you know, you live right there in Denver, Colorado. You went to Arizona State University. You've got your alma mater and the two flagship programs coming out of your state in the MCLA Final Four. What are your feelings regarding that as a lacrosse fan and, of course, as a journalist who's covered the MCLA for a long time as well?
As a journalist, I have to remain objective, and I try very hard to remain objective. But at the same time, I am a fan, and there are a lot of conflicting feelings, but I've said it all week. I've said it since the tournament started and even before. I got three horses in this race, and I can't lose. No matter what, I walk out of Greenville happy. I'm happy for the Colorado Buffaloes. I'm happy for the Arizona State Sun Devils. I'm happy for the Rams, regardless of how it falls out. And to know that probably my three favorite Division I programs are there playing for it, I saw it coming from the beginning of the year as the season started to evolve. And I've quickly, quite frankly, and I'm not saying it because he's sitting right next to me, I've become a Westminster Griffins fan. I really think that Mace Goodhand runs a tight ship, and gets the best and a whole lot of respect from his kids, and they're one of the class acts in the MCLA.
Well, Dan, you might have smoothed over, a Utah lacrosse advocate in Mace Goodhand, but I'm not sure how folks in Provo really feel about you right now. But regardless, bringing things back to the Division II level as we wrap up our segment with you, we have a 1-4 matchup in Division II between St. Thomas and Liberty. Liberty has been, as a team that you thought was overseeded and has been winning ugly, and as Coach Galvin told with us before the podcast, it really doesn't matter at this point. W's W. It's been a long time since St. Thomas has lost a lacrosse game. If Liberty is the team to do it, what do you think is the key to victory for them?
Liberty's going to have to get real strong goaltending and control the ball. They do not want to get into a horse race with St. Thomas. St. Thomas will run them off the field. So they really need to control possession. They need to control the faceoff X. And something that they're not so strong at. The winning faceoffs is not their strong suit. But if they can figure out a way to do it, if they can hang close, the one thing that I do think they have is they've kind of got that mentality that they've got nothing to lose. You know, nobody necessarily expected them to be here. They are here. Now they're playing in the semifinals. And really the pressure is on St. Thomas and Coach Moosberger to pull out the W there.
Dan Matthews, thank you so much for your time and insight on the podcast today, calling the lead play-by-play throughout most of these tournament games. He will be your lead play-by-play announcer throughout the entire Division II and Division I semifinals and championship game. Dan, thank you so much for your time. And as we move along in the Inside Lacrosse podcast, I only participated in this tournament once. It was in 2007. My Emory Eagles and I were fortunate enough to beat the Fort Lewis Skyhawks, who were led by John Robinette, who's actually here on the tournament staff. And every time I see him at this tournament, I really have no difficulty reminding him of that result. And unfortunately, our tour for an MCLA championship that year ended in the quarterfinal round against Mace Goodhand's Westminster Griffins. And I've put that loss behind me, and Mace and I have developed quite a good relationship. And Mace, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really special season for you with everything that's been going on with your program since we actually talked about 12 months ago right here in Greenville, South Carolina. But let's start off with a guy who really made a name for himself right here in Greenville, South Carolina last year, particularly in your quarterfinal matchup against Davenport. Jake Arthur's injury status. He has the shattered collarbone. That was a key storyline, going into the RMLC championships. as well as this tournament. He didn't play in your opening round game. You were able to get him into the lineup yesterday. What's your overall feeling about how your team was able to adjust and find success without this potential player of the year candidate? And, you know, are we going to see a little bit more of him?
Jake, yes, you will see more of him. Jake's a pretty special young man. He did stand out last year. He did stand out last year in our semifinal match with Davenport, where he almost single-handedly refused to let them get the win that day. Unfortunately, we fell one goal short. And Jake went on. He's kind of a quiet performer. He's in Army ROTC, but he's just not in Army ROTC. He was the battalion commander this year. He missed most of fall ball because he was interviewing at medical schools. He got accepted at every medical school he applied to, and he's starting medical school this summer. So it just gives you a little insight into the kind of young man he is. And, oh, by the way, he's got a rocket shot and the conditioning you expect of a young officer candidate who has now received his commission. Jake shattered his collarbone bumping into a guy in the last minute of practice on Monday about 2.5 weeks ago. The next day, our team doc operated on it, put a plate on his collarbone, and started to fuse back together. He took no pain meds and had an x-ray. A week and a half later, it was healing normally. And I talked with Dr. Cooper today and said, is this really a good idea? He released him to play within his own limitations of potential re-injury. And he said, it's a little different with a collarbone. He said, a collarbone, if you break it again, we just go back and fix it. He said, if it was a knee or an Achilles or an ankle that could be seriously damaged for a long period of time, we would never do something like this. Mm-hmm. But this is just a broken bone. And in all honesty, the day he got cleared was 8 days after his surgery. He went down and shot an 86-mile-an-hour shot at the cage in Salt Lake City at Tribal West Lacrosse Shop. So the kid's a bit of an overachiever. We got him on the field yesterday, and in the first two minutes of him being on the field, he rocketed a shot off the goalie's face mask that I think startled everybody. So Jake's there to play, and it's not about him. He wants to contribute. If he doesn't think he can contribute, then he'll be the first one to get off the field. But what's really nice about our team is we've never relied on one guy to be our offense. We have six guys on the field at a time, and they all seem to show up at the right time to help us out when somebody's maybe having an off day. So we're excited that he's playing, but he's just one part of the group.
Jake is a special young man indeed. Of course, he made our Inside the Cross Academic All-American team earlier this year with everything he's done, accomplished on the field and then off the field as well with ROTC and pre-med. We made a note in the column yesterday that obviously everything that sparked that academic piece came out of information that came out of Austin, Texas when they went to the West Coast. Andy Garrigan administering those exams found out that Drew Virk from Stanford and Pete Moosbrugger from St. Thomas also taking tests on the road, as are John Galvin's Colorado Buffaloes. This is really a reoccurring theme here in the MCLA, and really nice to know that the universities are supporting these student-athletes in that way. But, you know, Mace, you mentioned that your scoring, your offense doesn't just come with one guy, and you have a lot of capable weapons. And, you know, Colin Madsen, who's always kind of jumped off the stat sheet, he actually didn't score in your victory yesterday, but he was dominant at the faceoff X. He had four assists. What does this young man mean to Westminster Lacrosse?
You know, yeah, Colin is the poster boy for when you're trying to explain to somebody who doesn't know lacrosse why kids like it so much. They like it so much because you don't have to stand and be a giant person or a phenomenally fast or tall person. You just have to have a person that has a lot of heart and a lot of brains and a lot of stick skills, and you can be an impact in this game. And I think everybody loves the lacrosse game because there are great players, big and small, in lacrosse. And Colin is absolutely the epitome of that. He is all over the field. He will face off. He will, he'll get the ground ball. I think the way I explained it yesterday is after another team takes a little run, gets a little emotional lift, Colin wants that next face off. He wants to go out, he fight, he'll get it and take it down and answer that goal and quickly squash the enthusiasm. He's just that kind of eye of the tiger guy. Yesterday, he passed the ball off instead of shooting the last play when he drove down the center of the field after a face off. He dodged a guy. He got to about 8 yards and there was a guy at 6 yards. And so he passed it and got an assist instead of a goal. It's not about him. It's just about what we're doing next. He got our MVP award for our offense this year. We gave it out last night. And when I introduced him then, I expressed that what we, our goal was to not beat our opponents. It was to be better than ourselves in every game. And nobody on our team epitomizes that more than Colin. He just goes out and raises his game every game.
Fantastic. You know, Mace, I don't know necessarily know offhand how old this tradition is. I only became privy to it this year. But tell us a little bit about the Griffin Hammer and the student athlete that currently carries it.
This is the first year we've carried it with us. It's the Griffin Hammer Award is a sledgehammer, a purple and gold sledgehammer with the word Griffin on it. And it comes to the substitution box. It's carried out. It's carried to the bus by a freshman. His job to get it to the bus, and then the guy that earned it carries it from the bus to the field every game and puts it in the box. And it's our reminder that we invested time in this season in other places besides lacrosse practice. We have a really nice weight room, and we spent a lot of time in the weight room all fall. And the guys in our program come to our program because that's the kind of experience they want. They want to be pushing themselves to put on the weight. And so the guy that gets to carry that is the guy that tests the best, and all of our tests are rated based on your body weight. So it doesn't need to be the guy that lifted the most weight. It's the guy based on poundage who improved the most in the off season, his overall strength. And we have a nice little litany of tests we do. And you know, young men like to achieve, and you just give them some things to go after, and that keeps them occupied. This year, Brad Tack was our winner, a senior, star attackman in high school, ended up playing D-Mitty for us. One of those guys that'll do whatever the team needs. And he's been a great first year carrier of the hammer.
I gotta say, I think it's a great tradition, having played NCAA Division III lacrosse my freshman year, and knowing what kind of work you have to put in at the varsity level with the weight room, and you have those expectations within your program, and to really cultivate as part of your culture, and to have the reminder there with you at every game, I gotta say, it's something that I really agree with, and I think that you know, in some way or another, we might see a little bit more of, or should anyway. But, you know, Mace, you're going to the MCLA Division I level next year. You tested yourself in your schedule this year against the likes of Colorado State, and BYU. You played BYU last year as well. But you won a national championship at the D2 level in 2008 out in Irving, Texas, in Cowboys Stadium. When you look back at that, and as you move forward into next season in Westminster's lacrosse future, how much would a championship this year mean to your legacy as a program?
Oh, it had nothing to do with my legacy. I think what it has to do with is just, you know, you orient your players to try to achieve a goal, and you keep that goal in front of you. And it's one of the real, we talk about the development of the game, and the MCLA has so much to offer that the NCAA doesn't offer in the West. Mm-hmm. It has the ability for a team to be in a league and maybe lose a game in the early season, but get back into the playoffs and earn a slot to the national championship or whatever. And sometimes those NCAA teams in the West that aren't part of it, of a conference that has an AQ, just they play their 14 games and their season's over. So certainly that's the goal. The drive at the end of the tunnel is to win that championship. We really respect St. Thomas, and we enjoy playing them as they have enjoyed playing us. They have certainly set a very high bar, and we know that if we can get past the Johnnies tomorrow, and then if you know, Liberty doesn't surprise us all, and give the Tommies an early ticket home, it could be a real fun matchup. And certainly, if we were able to take home a trophy from this place this year, we would think it was a heck of an accomplishment.
A heck of an accomplishment indeed it would be. And, you know, Mace, it's very interesting. Look at these Final Four programs and the way that they're administered. St. John's and St. Thomas, two Division III schools who have very strong connections with their athletic departments, but are basically student-run clubs, more or less. Liberty is a school that, you know, just has a very, very great club sports model. And Kyle McQuillan, and the head coach, similarly to that of Ken Lovick from Georgia Tech, is a full-time employee of the school within the club sports office, and that's why they've been so competitive. But there's always been a very, very big theme in this league about the NAIA model schools who have varsity funding and have resources on the varsity level when pertaining to weight room and scholarship opportunities. To this juncture, you know, we've seen some shakeup as the way this applies to women's lacrosse. At this point, Mace, why have schools like yours remained so loyal to the Men's Collegiate Lacrosse Association?
Well, the NAIA is the lacrosse presence in the NAIA, just like it is all over the world or all over the country, is growing, and it's growing every year. Mm-hmm. But the NAIA, like any large body, has certain parameters that you have to meet before they will consider sanctioning your sport. So right now,
there are not enough NAIA schools to have the NAIA sanction a championship. The MCLA, to its credit, is looking at the changing environment of lacrosse and trying to figure out how they can continue to help the game grow. I don't think that they saw lacrosse as a big obstacle in the NAIA. I think what they saw was that the NAIA was an opportunity to help the game grow, and whether we create our own conference within the MCLA for NAIA schools or really doesn't matter. I think what matters is that we get the game growing. I expect that we'll see the NAIA moving on this in a few years, and whether we have to move out of the MCLA at that time or whether it's a joint effort between the NAIA and the MCLA will be something for another chapter.
Mace Goodhand, thank you so much for your insight. Best of luck tomorrow against the St. John's Johnnies as you quest for the second MCLA Division II national championship in your program's history. We really appreciated having you on today.
I just wanted to point out that I'm really not crazy, but we are moving up into a conference where the top three teams are 1, 2, and 4 in the nation right now.
No doubt.
I'm not sure how we made that decision, but we got our work cut out for us next year for sure.
That you do, and with that, you toss the headphones over to a guy who you played this year and will certainly be playing more consistently in years to come, John Galvin, the head coach at University of Colorado out in Boulder. John, thank you so much for being with us. I got to ask you, all chalk, I mean, does this surprise you or does this not surprise you? You have three RMLC teams, two besides yourself, and Arizona State in the Final Four. What are your thoughts?
I mean, we definitely play in one of the toughest conferences in the country. I mean, even with you know, adding Westminster to our conference next year, is going to be a true test when we have, you know, three or four teams that we have to go out and play in Utah. And so, you know, our conference is tough. And we know the SLC is a very tough conference as well. So, you know, we're looking at probably two of the best conferences in the country right now. And, you know, it's pretty great when you have three of the four teams that are from the RMLC. You know, we're pretty fortunate that we get that type of competition, you know, within conference that we have to play them every year. And we're happy to do so. So
definitely. And, you know, you take a look at the history books in the MCLA, and the only championship appearance the Buffaloes ever had were in 2006, actually lost to the Rams. I mean, you've played them twice already this year in the regular season, the RMLC championship. How does this sort of stuff kind of play into, you know, your quest this season in 2013 for a national championship?
Well, you know, I think, you know, from the beginning, even in the fall, I mean, we didn't really kind of think about what we were going to be doing in the spring. We kind of, you know, step by step went through our fall ball process and, you know, getting the guys acclimated to really just, you know, how we practice and how we do things at Colorado. I mean, we're not about, you know, systems in the fall. We're not about, you know, teaching really complex things. We just really want the fundamentals to get down and then also really learning just the process. And it's kind of what we've been talking about with the guys all year. It's just really this, you know, the process of how we do things. And as the year progresses, you know, we start kind of preparing more for different teams and, you know, coming into the tournament, it's a tough tournament. We've had, you know, two tough games, you know, Texas and Michigan State were two great teams. And, you know, we have another one, you know, to play on Thursday. And, you know, it's going to be a tough battle and, you know, we got to go one at a time. So, you know, for us to, you know, think ahead of Arizona State, we have to be crazy. So, you know, to play it out, you know, 2006, you know, was tough losing to them, but, you know, the opportunity just to play in the, you know, national championship game. I think our guys and our alumni now are, you know, we're so proud of that. But, you know, of course, it's always, you know, I think it's everyone's some type of goal. It's not necessarily our top goal every single year. You know, the process hopefully just gets us there, or at least gets us an opportunity for it. You know, that's kind of what we always preach. So.
Coach Galvin, you said it yourself, you'd be crazy to try to start looking past this Arizona State team. It seems like Chris Malone's kids are really playing their best lacrosse when it matters most. What are the keys to victory against the Sun Devils tomorrow?
Coach Malone's got a great team. He's a great coach. You know, you definitely have to be really smart, you know, with the ball between the lines. You know, they're a transition team. They're very up-tempo. They move the ball really well. You know, they have three attackmen that are, you know, out scoring pretty much everybody in the country. And so, you know, we've got to be smart with the ball. I mean, you know, any team that's going to possess the ball probably longer is going to have more success. And, you know, a team that, you know, has some slip ups might, you know, end up being on top at the end. And, but, you know, they're a great team and they've got some great players. You know, we're going to have to prepare for them and, you know, hopefully, you know, we do really well. But, you know, other than that, you know, we have to kind of go one, you know, we got to kind of segment the game and go one, you know, one quarter, one shift at a time. So.
Definitely. And Coach Galvin and everybody in this room and you know, to all the fans listening out there. One of my favorite parts of, you know, covering this beat and doing this job is to really get to know all of the coaching staffs, not only the head coach, but the way that trickles down to the coordinator. And, you know, John, you really have one of the best staffs in the country with Marty Taffet and Ben Wise. These are two guys that you coached there in Boulder. What have these guys meant to see you lacrosse?
You know, they're kind of everything. And, you know, I can't take, you know, really any of the credit. You know, they do so much for us. You know, they're always there. They're always helping the guys. And, you know, it's really a part of our entire staff, you know, even as it goes back to the university. I mean, everyone that's kind of, you know, back in Boulder, you know, helping this team succeed. And, you know, it kind of just kind of moves up and down the line. And, you know, both Coach Taffet and Coach Wise have been instrumental in just kind of, again, keeping that process the same. They've been through, you know, some of the, you know, the tough days, the grinds that, you know, go through the kind of the middle of any lacrosse season. You know, we kind of like our first 2 weeks to be a pretty, you know, tough first couple of weeks in, you know, in that end of January. And those guys have been through it. So, you know, some of the things they have been through, are always easy for them to kind of translate that into, the guys that are playing on the team. And I think that's really helped some of our guys, you know, kind of correlate what the work is for and, you know, the payoff at the end. And, you know, other than that, you know, I think, you know, their mind for the game is great. You know, they're always willing to learn. They're always willing to, you know, want to do more. And, you know, they're a great staff, you know, and I mean, all the success really goes on to them and to, you know, to the university itself. So.
Two guys that I've really enjoyed meeting firsthand. Also important to note that Ben is actually headed out to Israel this summer to participate in training camp and tryouts for Team Israel in the 2014 World Games. Marty hopefully joining one of the Israeli-based clubs in the Lake Placid tournament later this summer. Really, really have had a fantastic time getting to know those guys amongst others here at the MCLA tournament, putting some faces to those names that we talk to throughout the year. And, you know, with that, we talk about your staff and the two special guys that they are, and let's talk about two special guys on your roster. Tyler Doherty, the first year that you kind of left Colorado before you came back, Tyler was a freshman, was actually on the CU practice squad, saved up a year of eligibility, has the highest GPA on the team, was accepted to CU Environmental Graduate School, so you have him back for another year. Brad McNee has been just unbelievably special in goal. This is a kid who came all the way out from Ridgewood, New Jersey to play for the Buffaloes. What makes these guys such special players?
Well, you know, I remember, you know, talking to Brad when he was trying to come out, you know, kind of actually deciding between a late walk-on spot at Penn State and then, you know, making a decision with Colorado, knowing that he wanted to kind of come in as an engineer at first. And, you know, Brad switched over to computer science, I believe, either after his freshman year. And, you know, Brad and I talked, you know, probably pretty much after I left. And, you know, he understood probably, you know, what was going on and that, you know, I was going to be leaving the, you know, the team and coaching. And, you know, Brad for 2 years played under some great coaches and, you know, had some tremendous success. You know, I know one of them was, you know, beating Michigan on Kittredge. And, you know, I think he, you know, I couldn't tell you the stat, but knowing Brad, I'm sure he played pretty well. And, you know, on the field, you know, Brad's a great player. But, you know, he's just a leader off the field. And I think some of the attributes that he has off the field are pretty special. I mean, just the type of person he is, you know, getting to know Brad, you know, even closer for the last 2 years has been really a good time. And it's tough to see a guy like that leave, you know, especially like all of our seniors that are, you know, won't be around next year. But, you know, that's, you know, kind of the ebb and flow of college across or college sports, you know, and, but you enjoy and, you know, really taking the time that you have with them. And, you know, we're fortunate to get Tyler back next year. You know, he's a guy that, you know, sometimes almost too smart for everything. He's, you know, there's, the other morning I'm walking out, you know, of the hotel and, you know, Tyler's got a notepad and he's got all these dots and A's and M's and goals. And, you know, he stops me in the hallway and as I'm going out, you know, I just kind of said, you know, hey, Tyler, what are you doing? He's like, oh, you know, I was going to come in and talk to you about something. I'm like, you know, he almost seemed too serious about, you know, what we were about to talk about. He's like, I don't get what we're doing here. Can you tell me what's going on? And I mean, Tyler, he knows what's going on. He's like five steps ahead of everybody else. And, but you know, that's just the way he is. And, you know, Tyler's been had a tremendous season. You know, and again, you know, off the field, just a tremendous, tremendous person and, you know, a great character guy. And, you know, again, we're building a program around, guys like Brad and guys like Tyler and, you know, they're special guys. And again, we have, you know, 48 of them that are, you know, special and all together, you know, here and, you know, trying to make a run and seeing what we can do. But, you know, they know that, you know, it's one day at a time. And today we went through walkthrough and, you know, I think they're now they're at dinner. So, you know, they're enjoying that first. So.
Yeah. No question. I heard some interesting stories about your walkthrough today. It seemed pretty humorous when I spoke to Coach Taffet a few minutes ago. And, you know, as you said, Tyler, a very special person off the field. Again, similar to Jake Arthur, made the Inside Lacrosse Academic All-American team. And Coach Galvin, we thank you for your time. We also thank our other guest, Dan Matthews from Lacrosse Talk Radio, the lead play-by-play announcer out here in Greenville, of course. Mason Goodhand from the Westminster Griffins. And lacrosse fans, MCLA fans, tomorrow, Serene Stadium, Greenville, South Carolina. Tune in to MCLA.us at 11 a.m. as the St. John's Johnnies as a 3-seed take on Mace Goodhand's 2-seeded Westminster Griffins out of Salt Lake City, Utah, going for their second national championship, having won the first in 2008 out there at Cowboy Stadium. 2 o'clock, St. Thomas takes on Liberty. St. Thomas going for their second consecutive championship, trying to really make Greenville a good luck spot for them, going for a perfect season. The challenger is Liberty out of the SCLC, first SCLC team in the Division II field to make it to the Final Four since Eckerd in 06. We'll see if they can challenge the Tommies. And then in Division I, we have, of course, Colorado State, similarly to St. Thomas, going for the perfect season, won the championship last year and trying to win through again and build on their dynasty. They host Colorado, the 4-seed, for the third consecutive year in the MCLA Final Four. On the other side of the bracket, Arizona State, no stranger to the Final Four since Chris Malone has been at the helm of that program, and they take on John Galvin's Colorado Buffaloes, 3 RMLC teams, 1 team from the SLC, pretty exciting, in the Division II field, 2 teams out of the UMLC, a consistent challenger out of the RMLC, of course, making 4 RMLC teams represent 8 of that in the MCLA Final Four, and Liberty, again, a surprise out of the SCLC. And that will conclude our Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast. Those Division I games, Colorado State BYU kicks off tomorrow at 5. Arizona State will play Colorado at 8 o'clock, and that will do it. We appreciate your time here on the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast. Tune into the games. Keep letting us know what you think of the tournament on Twitter and the social media outlets, and thank you so much for your time.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.